This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this U.S. politics edition of the program, former President Donald J. Trump is acquitted in his second impeachment trial. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Seven Republicans joined all 48 Democrats and two independents in voting to convict former President Trump for inciting the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol, rendering it the most bipartisan impeachment verdict in U.S. history. However, the vote fell short of the two-thirds majority required for conviction in the Senate. Analysts say that some of the 42 Republicans who voted for acquittal may have done so on procedural rather than on substantive grounds. Many lawmakers on both sides of the political aisle say that the House of Representatives' Democratic impeachment managers presented a persuasive case against the former president, who falsely claimed that he won the 2020 election and perpetuated what has been dubbed the big lie, which fueled the Capitol assault. Mr. Trump is the first president in U.S. history to try to overturn an election result and interrupt the peaceful transfer of power. His refusal to accept his loss to Democrat Joe Biden and his incitement of a crowd of supporters who violently attacked Congress while it was meeting to certify the election results provoked the ire of former ally, Republican Senator Mitch McConnell, who took to the Senate floor after the trial and denounced Donald Trump.
There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president.
Senator McConnell also accused Mr. Trump of, quote, a disgraceful dereliction of duty, unquote. He was referring to the fact that Trump allegedly failed to stop the riot or to send immediate help. Five people died, dozens were injured, and federal property was destroyed during the assault. Despite Minority Leader McConnell's assessment of Mr. Trump's behavior, he voted, along with 42 other Republicans, to acquit because he and several other Republicans do not think the Constitution gives the Senate the power to try a former official. A recent ABC Ipsos public opinion poll suggests that Americans largely disagree with the acquittal. Almost 3 in 5 Americans, or 58%, say former President Donald Trump should have been convicted in his second impeachment trial. If nothing else, says analyst Hussein Ibish, the Senate trial produced the first unified, coherent narrative of January 6th and the events leading up to it. Meantime, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced plans to create an independent commission to investigate the Capitol siege. VOA's Patsy Wittakuswara writes, quote, this would be similar to the commission that studied the 9/11 attacks for 15 months and issued a sweeping report that led to changes in the nation's laws and operational framework in dealing with terrorism. Some Republican lawmakers have signaled their support, unquote. As President Donald Trump was immune from criminal prosecution and civil liability, but now that he is a private citizen, he no longer enjoys executive privilege, and his legal troubles are just beginning to mount. Well, for more on the ramifications of the impeachment trial, as well as its impact on President Joe Biden's legislative agenda, we turn to our veteran political analysts. John Fortier is resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and that's a prominent conservative think tank here in Washington. And Jim Kessler, he's executive vice president for policy at Third Way. That's a center-left policy group also based in Washington. Both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program. Well, John Fortier, let's start with you. The last time we were at these microphones was just after the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. What's your reaction to the 57-43 vote? 48 Democrats, as I said, two independents who caucus with Democrats, and then seven Republicans voted to convict Trump. That's a significant majority, but not the two-thirds that the Senate needs to convict. What are your main takeaways from this unprecedented second impeachment trial of President Trump?
I think the outcome that he was acquitted was probably not unexpected. We thought that probably Republicans, a number of them, would stick together and not vote to convict. But the number of Republicans who voted for conviction was, I think, higher than I expected, a significant number, not close to the margin needed, but still showed that there were certainly people who were not only unhappy with Donald Trump and his actions, but willing to stand up and vote against the former president and his party. You know, I think at the end of the day, Democrats put forward a case that especially highlighted the horrors of January 6th, highlighted some actions of the president in the time after the Electoral College met in the last month or so before the counting of the votes, where the president really pursued these matters further than he should have. You're left with Republicans who voted to acquit him did so for a variety of reasons, some procedural, some certainly a mixed motives of liking the policies but not liking the man, others looking to just move on. So, it wasn't a good result for Donald Trump, even though he was acquitted. Here, I think where we're left is that Donald Trump still has significant support in the party, but you see already his megaphone is less. He isn't able to communicate because of social media. He's out of office. And I do think he will face some troubles in the legal realm as well as some in the political realm. That doesn't mean the party has turned on him. He's still the most important figure in the Republican Party, and what he does over the next few years is important, but the actions broadly have diminished him, even though he was acquitted.
Jim Kessler, your take. What do you think was accomplished in the trial? What did we learn, even though we pretty much knew the outcome that there would not be enough Republicans to convict? But was it significant that there were 7 Republicans? What does this say as well about the trial?
I think it's very significant. Some of those Republicans, like Liz Cheney, the number 3 Republican in the House of Representatives, voted for impeachment in the House. And while Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, did not vote for conviction, he all but voted for conviction. His speech was essentially Donald Trump is guilty, but on a particular technicality of my viewing of the Constitution and the Senate's role in impeachment, I am not going to vote to convict. I think the long term on this is the Republican Party is moving into they're in a civil war. It is not the prelude of the civil war. The civil war has begun, and they are now moving into an area of the unknown. This has never really been the case for the Republican Party, where it really feels like they're in a crisis period of definition, probably since Barry Goldwater lost in 1964. And those differences were over policy, not really over differences of morals and ethics. So you're already seeing this playing out. 2022, the midterm elections, generally, those are very good elections for the party not in power. This would generally be good congressional elections for Republicans in 2022. But already you're seeing in Pennsylvania, a key state where a Republican senator is retiring, Pat Toomey, a senator who voted to convict, who they nominate is probably going to be a Trump supporter and will probably lose that seat to a Democrat. And that means it'll be very difficult for Republicans to retake the Senate in 2022, whereas before I thought it would be more of a given.
Back to you, John Fortier, to talk about the future of the Republican Party, to what extent you think that it is indeed in a civil war. We're already seeing harsh words between President Trump, who excoriated Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, calling him dour, unsmiling. He's a political hack. And then at the same time, Jim Kessler says, there are some interesting Republicans who took a chance. Others, Maine Senator Susan Collins, Ben Sass, Mr. Cassidy in Louisiana, all voted to convict, but they're not up for reelection. Many of these Republicans are being censured in their state parties because they voted to convict President Trump. Where are we in the Republican Party? What's its future? What is the role for Trump, even though you did say he lost his megaphone to some extent, but he's still so powerful. He still has a grip on the so-called base.
Well, I agree with Jim to an extent. I'm not sure I would call it a civil war, but there's a lot of uncertainty, and there is the possibility of fracture in the Republican Party, which could hurt the Republicans in their chances in some of these elections. I think it's still a big unknown as to exactly what Donald Trump's role is. 4 years is a long time. I mean, the big question is, will he run again? Where I think he would still have significant support, but also diminished support more broadly and a hard time to win just because at the margins, I think he's lost support. Will he be very active in supporting primary challenges to Republicans he sees as not being loyal enough Perhaps. But again, let's see how far that goes. You know, I think at the end of the day, one big question is, will Donald Trump really be serious about running again? That would be a big thing. And I think probably a negative for Republicans generally. But also, if he doesn't, I don't think you're going to see someone from any part of any wing of the Republican Party who's seen as anti-Trump be the nominee. I don't necessarily think that is a bad thing for Republicans. What they'd like to do is not be somebody who's like Trump and has Trumpian policies, but isn't Trump himself. And I think that would probably be the better outcome for Republicans. But yes, there's uncertainty, and his role and what goes on will be important. The only other thing I will point to is, we, of course, have been talking about Donald Trump endlessly for 4 years as he is president, and we still talk about him now, and he is a significant figure. But that talk is going to fade, has already faded, and we will be focusing more on the performance of Joe Biden and Democrats. And to that extent, I think there will be some more unity in the party on issues. If it's this year or 2 years or 3 years from now, you'll definitely see ways in which many people will be reminded why they had voted Republican in the past or don't like Democrats separate from Donald Trump. So I do think there's uncertainty, but we will not have as much of the Donald Trump show as we've had for the past 4 years. It will be somewhat muted, and his decisions ultimately will be important for what happens.
So back to you, Jim Kessler, very briefly. You know, Trump may diminish in his stature per se as a human being, but Trumpism, some analysts say, will remain. In other words, you know, how can a party, the grand old party, the Republican Party, both accommodate the likes of Liz Cheney, the number three in the House of Representatives, who did vote to impeach, as you said, and felt that Mr. Trump betrayed his constitutional oath in promoting the big lie that he actually won when he did not, and then didn't do anything to stop the violence, in fact, encouraged it. And then all of the other Republicans who also voted to censure him by voting to convict. How can those senators and other Republican members of the House of Representatives, like Adam Kinzinger, for example, how can they exist with purveyors of the QAnon theory or other conspiracy theories, and even domestic terrorists like the Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, and other assorted white nationalists who also identify with the Republican Party?
It's going to be tough. If you look at the Democrats are used to arguing amongst ourselves. That has been the state of the Democratic Party for as long as I can remember. And in part, it's because the Democratic coalition is made up of almost equal measures of moderates and liberals. The conservative coalition, the Republican coalition, is nearly all conservatives now. The Republican Party has shrunk. It hasn't won a national election in the popular vote since 2004, and only then it did it just barely. And so Republicans are trying to win a larger share of a shrinking pool. So you're already seeing a decline in Republican voter registration since January 6th, since the insurrection. Voter registration in the states that keep track of that sort of thing, in the first 4 weeks after January 6th, Republican registration has declined 140,000. So Republicans are about to go through something that they are not used to, which is, I do believe it is a civil war. I think that John Fortier is underestimating the vindictiveness of Donald Trump and what he will want to do by people that he deems are not loyal, and the rising power and influence of the conspiracy theorist websites like the QAnon followers and then the extremist groups like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, I think are having a greater influence on the party. And if that wing wins, and if they win national elections, because yes, Joe Biden will be, that's how they'll measure it, how well Joe Biden is doing. I fear for this country. You know, I really think we will be heading in a dangerous place. My hope is that a more establishment wing of the Republican Party wins out. I think we're a long way from that victory.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, he's resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard, executive vice president for policy at Third Way. They joined me via Microsoft Teams, and we're discussing the issues dominating the U.S. political landscape, from former President Donald Trump's second impeachment trial to President Biden's urgent legislative agenda. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Now, here's a shout out to a very longtime loyal listener from Lagos, Nigeria, Goodness Nwokolo. Thanks so much, Goodness, for always following us and commenting on our programs. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. So back to our discussion. Over to you, John Fortier. Very quickly, what about the commission, the so-called 9/11 style commission? Where does that stand in terms of how it will investigate the events leading up to and the insurrection on January 6th? And how important is it that that take place?
I think it is going to happen. And I think in some areas, there would be wide support for this sort of commission. And obviously, the events of January 6th and what was behind it, I think it is probably going to get into some territory that's less consensual between the parties. And Republicans, I think, will worry that the focus will be on broadly thinking about conservative thought and free speech in all sorts of ways, and more mainstream or maybe Trump-like conservatives being caught up in a web of the extremists. And so doing this well, I think, will be tricky, and trickier than 9/11, but I think this one will be trickier. And so we'll have a commission. I think we'll learn valuable lessons that will probably not redound well on the president and some others. But I also think there's some danger that it will turn in parts to ways that are going to seem political, and the Republicans will feel that it has gone too far. So that's the risk.
Over to you, Jim Kessler, for your comments. Many analysts said that the House managers did a very good job in outlining the events that led up to the insurrection, but they didn't call witnesses. That was controversial. There was a lot of discussion over that. But other analysts say we do need to hear. We need interviews, you know, White House aides, members of Congress, Capitol Police. As a D.C. resident, we're in an armed camp still, gentlemen. There's a big fence with a large perimeter, and we're living the aftermath. It's very disconcerting, you know, just for the ordinary D.C. resident, and I would think other Americans visiting the Capitol. There's so much fear. People are traumatized after what happened and are arguing that we need to get to the bottom of it, independent of politics.
I wish that would be the case. I find myself kind of dubious and skeptical about this commission. Not that I don't think there needs to be one. I think there does. It's very different than the 9/11 commission, where the country really came together and said, okay, what really did happen here? I think this is going to break down into a lot of partisan bickering, unfortunately. I think a lot of the witnesses will not want to really be truthful in their testimony. So I wish that this commission would do what a commission like this ought to do. I just don't think the political situation in America is going to allow it to be as fruitful as we want it to be.
Well, we'll revisit that question as we know more about the commission. But let's go to the legislative agenda of Joe Biden, John Fortier, this COVID relief package that he would like to get through the Congress, so-called American Rescue Package. How do you see this going forward? Do you think it would require what we're calling reconciliation, just a majority vote? Or do you see Republican buy-in? It's a lot of money, $1.9 trillion, but many Democrats and some Republicans are arguing that it's important for states, for individuals, for getting the vaccine distributed and really helping the economy.
Well, I do think we are going to see a package pass, and I think we'll also use this mode of reconciliation, which is we get a few bites of the apple where you can use a procedure that only a majority is required in the Senate, and that doesn't require getting rid of the filibuster, which is a separate issue. And I do think that Democrats are basically united on this. They still only have 50 votes in the Senate, so the numbers may not look exactly the same. There may be some negotiating. There certainly will be. I also think you've seen even some Democratic economists question the size of the package, whether it's too large. But the big picture, I do think, is that Joe Biden is going to be better off focusing his early legislative agenda on issues related to COVID, even some that Republicans may disagree with his positions, than other issues which are much more clearly polarizing between the parties. And focusing on the task at hand, I think, will be more helpful to him, whereas issues like immigration and voting rights and other things that will be much more divisive between the parties, you know, will not be as fruitful. So broadly speaking, I think this will get done. I don't know what exactly it'll look like, but it will be relatively large, relatively like the Biden proposal, and better for him to focus his actions on that early on than by starting with something that would be less likely to get done.
Jim Kessler, how do you see this COVID relief package going forward? Do you think that it can gain some Republican votes? Is there any impact from the impeachment trial that will spill over in a negative or maybe even in a positive way with respect to buy-in? And what about any kind of Democratic criticism. The package, I believe, includes a raise in the minimum wage. President Biden is saying that doesn't necessarily have to be part of the package. That could be very controversial, even for some Democrats, more conservative Democrats.
I expect it'll pass. I think it'll be around the $1.9 trillion that the president has proposed. I do not think it'll get any Republican support. I feel like that ship has sailed. There were some provisions in it from the outset that probably repelled Republicans, including the minimum wage increase, which will not get into the final package. And when it showed up in the original Biden package, when I looked at it, and I know reconciliation pretty well, those rules, I just thought, well, that's not going to make it through, because that doesn't really follow the rules of what a budget reconciliation package should do. Ultimately, I expect that this bill will be popular. It is needed, whether it's $1.9 trillion or something slightly less, something in that ballpark is needed for the economy. This also passes the test that folks will understand that they're getting something. They're going to be getting stimulus checks. They're going to be getting an increase in a child tax credit. So voters will be able to feel it. Ultimately, this will redound to the benefit of Joe Biden. It's an early win for him. When you add that to early successes that we're having in his administration of bringing new COVID case numbers down and ramping up of the vaccine, the first 6 months of the Biden administration could be pretty positive, and he could come out of that with fairly high approval ratings and feel like that he's making progress. Of course, there's a long way to go after that. There are other things that become more controversial. John mentioned immigration. You try and do that, your chances of success diminish greatly, and the country divides a bit over that as well.
Well, let's just conclude on that topic. Back to you, John Forte, on immigration. We just saw New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez and California Congresswoman Linda Sanchez introduce the so-called U.S. Citizenship Act. It's in line with the Biden administration's immigration reform plan. What about immigration, maybe taking pieces, not passing a huge overhaul, but do you think some pieces, the Dreamers regularizing their status, or farm workers and other frontline workers who are part of the immigrant community, do you think that there could be some bipartisanship over that?
I'm very skeptical. I do think, you know, we've of course seen the Republican Party has over time become more skeptical of immigration. Also over time, and especially during the Trump administration, you've seen the Democratic Party become much more pro-immigration. So the parties are farther apart than they ever have been. And, you know, if in the past it was always thought that there was a deal that was needed, that perhaps there would be some aspects of regularizing the status of certain people here, Dreamers, others, plus some security measures and cracking down on future illegal immigration, whatever part of that is a big deal, I think that's harder and harder to do. You see the Biden administration at least signaling they're not as interested in the security side, and their party isn't as interested. They're much more clearly pro-immigration. So I think it's difficult to pass a piece that is just pro-immigration and doesn't have security with it, and yet I see both sides not really finding out great way to come together. Even though Democrats have some momentum, they feel good about it. They still have a 50-50 Senate. We still have the filibuster that's likely to continue. So I think these things are very, very difficult to do and will be divisive.
Jim Kessler, how does the Biden administration thread the needle? You get the last word on that topic.
In 2013, the U.S. Senate passed an immigration bill that included the votes of 13 Republicans. And they got 63 votes in all. If that exact same bill was on the Senate floor, I think half of those Republicans wouldn't vote for it, and probably 10 of the Democrats wouldn't vote for it because there was too much border security put into it. So John is right that both parties have shifted on this issue in an unhelpful direction. This is a tough go for Joe Biden. Will they break the comprehensive immigration reform bill into pieces and try and pass smaller pieces, you know, maybe something for farm workers with something on what's known as E-Verify, in which employers, you know, really have to verify the citizenship status of people who work for them? Or will there be something for the so-called Dreamers, people who came to this country as children, a path to citizenship for them in exchange for some border security? That is possible. But for that to happen, the activist voices on the left would have to signal to Biden that they would be accepting of it. And I think there might be some appetite among some Republicans to do it. But in the Senate, you're going to need 60 votes, and it is a tall order.
on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this politics edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler. He's executive vice president for policy at Third Way.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.